He is the columnist for USA Today. You can find his work online. Visit usatoday.com. Become a Twitter follower. Use the handle at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are you on this Wednesday, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
All righty. I don't know, for some reason this week when I've been talking with some media people, we've added in a little history lesson. So you're a columnist now. You were a columnist when you worked here. I know also when you worked for Sports Illustrated. Was there ever a time early in your career or prior to when I knew you, were you ever a beat writer? Did you ever exclusively cover a team or a program?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, my title now is reporter at USA Today. I don't want to overdo it. We write columns occasionally.
Okay.
But and I'm, you know, working on one for tomorrow. But yeah, I'm a college football reporter. Before I was at the Register Guard, I covered Oklahoma football as the beat writer for the Oklahoman, which is the Oklahoma City paper. So yeah, and before that, I was a reporter at the newspaper in Little Rock. And before that, around the dawn of time, I was in school.
What years did you cover Oklahoma? Nice one, George.
From 2000 to 2007.
Oh, you covered the national championship team.
That was the first year I was on the beat.
Wow.
So, I actually covered 20 consecutive games before they lost. The 21st game I covered was the first time they lost a game.
Wow. You know, I saw something you tweeted over the weekend, and you commented on it. Apparently, an airline had mobile detonation device as a name for one of those wireless hotspots. I'm kind of curious. You log a lot of miles. Is working for USA Today, is this the most you've traveled? And is that something you embrace, or, hey, it comes with the job?
Oh, yeah. Without question, it's the most I've traveled. I mean, because I have basically no home games, just to start with.
Sure.
Whereas if you cover a single team, you know, you've got half the games are at home, and the majority of the stories are at home. So in my case, even though we live in Oklahoma, and so there's a couple of programs right next to us, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, there's not a ton of games that I'm not out of town for, and there's not a ton of stories that I'm not having to go somewhere for. So it's easily been the most travel I've ever done. But I really like it. Sometimes it becomes a grind.
Right.
But, you know, I would never complain about it because it's a great job.
I got you. I'm just a homebody. If I'm even getting on a plane, I don't sleep for a week. But let's get to something a little crazy. The finish the other night, Oklahoma City and the Spurs. Afterwards, I actually heard Barkley, Kenny Smith, Shaq, and they're like, I never saw an inbounder commit an offensive foul. Can we put this up there with among the most unique and just crazy endings you could remember, and you could pick the sport?
Yeah, absolutely we could. Now, I mean, I have to tell you, I don't you know, it was the entire 13.5 seconds.
Right.
You're right that Dion Waiters, you know, pushed Manu Ginobili with the ball or his elbow or whatever, which is really was just really weird in the moment. I assume he was trying to get Ginobili to hack at the ball and get a technical or something because he was concerned that the 5 seconds was kept ticking away. But it was really weird. But there were so many other things that went wrong in that entire 13.5 seconds. And before it started, before that offensive foul, Ginobili actually stepped on the line, which is should have been a delay of game, and they reset the thing and that kind of deal. But, you know, I've never seen a sequence like that. And it was just wild. I mean, there were blown calls that went both ways, just galore.
We're talking with George Schroeder, USA Today, world traveler. So if you hearken back to before game one of this series, the Spurs were a heavy favorite. They had that big blowout in game one. So I'm guessing in your mind, were you surprised the Thunder were able to bounce back like that and make it a series? Or when you've got two guys of that caliber, they're just always capable?
I was surprised. But I think I was surprised because I fall into the trap that I think we fall into with the NBA, that we overdo the result of every single game. It happens in the regular season, but it really happens in the playoffs. And every game in the NBA, more than most sports, I think, can be so different. Despite, I mean, you know, if you see a team blow a team out in football, it's unlikely that the next time if they have a rematch that there's going to be a completely different game. I guess it could happen. But in basketball, just think it's so meteoric that I should not have been surprised, but I was stunned. I mean, you know, we draw these sort of long-range overarching conclusions based off of one big game like that, and it doesn't have to mean a whole lot. And, in fact, it didn't. And so what you now got after two games of the series is the Thunder got the split that every road team wants to get the home court advantage. They got the split out of it.
Right.
And yet, yeah, I mean, you were thinking like, wow, will they win a game with these guys after that first one?
I want to get to some college football. Mike Gundy, you mentioned programs close to you, now 48 years old for those who are counting. He talked about the return of these satellite camps, and you wrote that he's kind of a pioneer using these. And
one of the first. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. So he said he was kind of expecting a reversal on the initial ruling. So I guess his reasoning behind the latest decision and how he said it might actually mean these camps might be larger or more substantial?
I think a lot of people, first off, expected a reversal. Whatever side of the fence they were on, they expected to get reversed once there was so much blowback.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, and look, and I think we're going to hear an awful lot about this whole deal this summer, and we're going to pay an awful lot of attention to it. And then I think, they'll address it in the offseason. I don't know how much they'll change things, but if they don't change things, I think it'll gradually, we won't hear much about it, because it frankly hadn't been that big a deal until Jim Harbaugh did that sort of let me put the Michigan brand and myself out there tour of the South last year. It had been going on quietly all over the country.
Right.
You know, come to find out, we hadn't paid much attention to it, but most of the Pac-12 teams, including Oregon State, have been involved in different things. But Oklahoma State, you're right, was one of the pioneers of it, maybe the pioneer of it. They did it themselves for the first year, and basically they got a big bus, got all the Oklahoma State logo stuff on it, and did like four or five camps in 4 or 5 days in 4 or 5 Texas cities, which is where they do most of their recruiting. Then when they changed the rules slightly a few years later where you couldn't do your own camp, you had to sort of participate in somebody else's camp, they got in with Mary Hardin Baylor, which is a really small school, not Baylor, but Mary Hardin Baylor.
Okay.
And they started putting on camps around the state of Texas, put on by Mary Hardin Baylor, but they were really Oklahoma State camps. And they ruffled a few feathers, but no big deal, and others began to do that quietly too. It wasn't a big deal. But in answer to your real question, he's putting on a camp or a series of camps that have, you know, a half dozen or more schools at all different levels of college football are going to be participating together in over, a short time period in June. Gundy is, and it'll end up being, as he called it, a mega camp, the Walmart of camps. And you know what? I don't know that it's going to be it's going to get some attention, and I don't know that it's going to be a big deal one way or the other in terms of an actual impact.
I want to stick with the Big 12. Your story, the league hired a firm out of Chicago to perform some analytics. They ran 40,000 simulations. So I guess the basics, what are they researching? And is it just all about the possibility that they can upgrade or grow or have a championship game? The main goal is they want to know how their odds are going to be better to get a rep in the college football playoff on a more regular basis.
Yeah, and by the way, they've been 2 years of the college football playoff, and they've been in 1 year and out 1 year.
Right.
And in 2 years of the college football playoff, the Pac-12 has been in 1 year and out 1 year. I mean, there's not a lot of data out there, but it isn't like the Big 12 has got some significant disadvantage that we can all see based on the results of the college football playoff, at least. But they've done a deep dive, and they've hired Navigate Research for that, and then another firm to check to do research into what TV deals they might be able to get if they did all sorts of different scenarios, adding teams, adding a network, adding whatever, doing that kind of thing. And the purpose of the whole thing is to try to figure out, among other things, whether expansion makes sense for them. But I say all that, and so you can put valuations on numbers and do computer modeling and all sorts of stuff, and you can come up with the likelihood that, as they say, a 12-team, 8-game conference schedule model, and they currently play a 9-game conference schedule, obviously, with 10 teams, that revised model would give you a greater likelihood of getting in the college football playoff. And And I guess maybe you could even say there's some validity to that. Although, as advanced as the analytics are, I still don't know how you get in the mind of a 13-member selection committee that's always changing and, you know, might change on the last minute when, you know, one person carries the day in a debate. I mean, it all comes down, but it still all comes down to this. You've got six or eight potential candidates that are schools. We all have heard all the names. They're all mid-majors, essentially. And the question is, do any of them move the needle enough to where it makes sense for you to do it? And I don't know that any amount of research changes that basic question. I mean, you can try to answer that and see if they move the needle enough, but it's still going to come down to whether you think it brings value to the league or waters it down.
All right, final thought here, and it's obviously all guesswork. Let's fast forward 5, 6, 7 years. We've got much more data to draw from. Do you think that all conferences will eventually get on the same page and all have a conference championship and all play the same amount of non-conference and all play the same amount of conference games? Are they going to basically do what they see best for themselves?
They're all going to do what they see best for themselves. And even if they did all play the same number of non-conference and conference games, you'd still have different scheduling philosophies within the conference and different sizes of the conference. I mean, the SEC is 14. They have a, and even if you decided to play 9 games instead of 8, which they currently play, how is that going to be apportioned out across the division? They've got permanent rivals, you know, that from across the division. You know, other leagues don't have that, and so they would rotate their cross-division games more often. So I think the idea that everything would be generic and homogenous in college football is, my guess is that maybe never happens. And frankly, that's part of the charm of the sport, is that it's different from region to region. But the idea that you could get them all to do that is, you know, call me when you're able to herd cats and we'll start talking.
I got you. All right. At USAtoday.com, at George Schroeder is Twitter. George, always fun. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thanks, Steve, and go Sluggers.
All right, take it easy.